You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on this best of the off-season show. We have heard from Alex Marvez, we've heard from Gil Brandt, and right now we're going to hear from Browns general manager Ray Farmer after the NFL draft.
Ray, your second draft in the books, 12 picks were made and brought to the Cleveland Browns. You still did some trades, three of them on the day. But let me just start overall, big picture. How was this experience, your second draft in the NFL as general manager? How did it compare to your first one? Was it similar or a totally different experience?
Totally different experience. When you work through getting the job in February and then you go from being a member of the crew to trying to now steer the ship, much different experience this year when I led the charge from day one and was able to help organize, structure, and create the collaboration that we believe in here differently than being a part of it and then now being asked to steer the ship.
I think this is going to be a defining draft for you. I think you, Mike Pettine, put the stamp on this Browns organization and team the way that you wanted to do it, systematically, building from the inside out, toughness, guys who were smart, dedicated. You had a lot of guys who were captains, a lot of guys who were academic All-Americans. What was kind of the core philosophy that you were trying to say, hey, this is what it means, literally, to be a Brown, play like a Brown, get drafted by the Browns. This is how we're building this organization.
I think you hit on a lot of the points. From our perspective, it was pretty simple. Continue to drive the competition on our roster. Independent of who's on your team to some degree, you want to continue to add good players. And in adding those good players, how you come to who's good is you have the team working together. So the coaches had input. Our scouts had input. We used a lot of different pieces to come to a culmination where we felt good about those players all around in the building.
Ray, Mike Pettine talked about it on our draft preview show that he spoke to the guys in the locker room and said, don't be worried, you know, if we draft in your position or you add a guy in your room, because we want the guy that doesn't get scared. We want the guy that rises above and sees the competition and rises above that competition as well.
Exactly. We talk about driving competition. And when you drive competition, it inherently puts some insecurity in other people. The reality is you got to find the guy, to your point, is that he's not afraid of competition. He looks the competition in the eye and he says, I'm better than you. That's what we want. That's how guys get better. You don't get better when you look at the guy behind you and say, he's terrible. You just don't get better that way. So in our minds, it's all about pushing those guys. You know, if everybody in the NFL stayed healthy and the top 22 played each other every week, you'd have a little variance around the league. And I don't care if you got the great quarterback, the worst one, like they're just like the teams are just that close in overall talent. The problem is when you get injuries and then 23 through 45 or 23 through 53 have to play, that's when you see really the differences in the teams that are really good and teams that aren't.
What was the biggest change you implemented from, you mentioned being part of the staff to running the show yourself? What was the thing that you changed the most from before to now?
When I first got the job, I think I had a lot of the same core philosophies, but changing kind of what's already kind of in motion to a certain point you can't. You kind of got to ride the wave and then deal with it as you will at the end. The changes after that really speak to how we kind of operate in our department. I would say it's never, again, really being my first year running the process all the way through. It didn't work like this at every meeting, but I give an example. Interns should speak first. So we never let the older guys talk before the interns speak. And then you work your way up the food chain, if you will, because it allows you to keep guys in a consistent manner and hear what guys really got to think. Because it's about genuinely what you think. Opinions matter. And just because somebody's the antithesis to what is being said, you don't want to have groupthink to where people just believe one opinion because it's the loudest opinion in the room. But you want everybody to have an honest, earnest opinion in those debates.
No hierarchy of thought. I like that. That's how they did it back in my days at McKinsey. When you went through this draft, first round, Danny Shelton 12, Cam Irving 19, did that fall exactly how you wanted it to? And at 19, was there debate? I know you like Nelson Agholor, some other receivers there. How close was that debate at 19?
The debate's always there. There's never one player that you're like, oh, it's this guy or it's bust. So from our perspective, it's always a pod or a collection or a group of players that you're considering at any particular pick. When we had our pick at 12, we knew to some degree who those players would be. It gets harder and harder the further you get away from one to know I can get my guy. And you got to make contingency plans. So here's my pod of players that I think will be available. But if somehow Matt falls to us, Are we going to take Matt over the names that we'd already had slated because we didn't anticipate Matt getting there? So you got to work through all those scenarios, and I think it fell a lot according to plan, but nevertheless, you still got to make some critical decisions.
When you're putting your board together, there were a lot of very talented guys who had serious off-the-field issues. Dorial Green-Beckham, Randy Gregory, who ended up falling in this draft. Were they on our board, or were you – because it seemed like your character was massive with the guys that were picked this year.
You watch Chappelle's Show?
I do watch Chappelle's Show.
I plead the fifth.
There are a lot of great amendments, but your favorite 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, fifth.
Exactly.
Okay. All right.
Ray, the one pick that even this soon into our show on Monday following the draft that people are jumping out and loving right now is Duke Johnson. Just talk about why you liked him, and then also, too, what role you think he can play here in the backfield. A very talented backfield room.
I like Duke. I think that he has a lot of skill sets that are different than our current guys. So how he plays in the passing game, his flexibility to move out and run routes, there's a lot of different pieces to his game that make him an explosive playmaker. If you think about all the great runners that have come through the University of Miami, he is the all-time leading rusher at that school.
Yes, Portis, James, McGahee,
I mean, you can run down the list of names. This guy somehow managed to set the record, and call it what you want, his production was off the charts. And you watch the tape. He's not a small man. He's just short, and you can see the contact balance. You can see the strength. You can see the nimbleness. You can see he can make the jump cuts. He has the vision. He has the strength, and he has the speed. All the pieces to being a frontline runner, we thought he was capable, and he has, even though a lot of people would categorize him as a third down back just because of his stature. So we thought we got a steal of a guy that had a full, complete skill set but was just being viewed differently by everybody else.
Do you view him to be used like a Sproles type?
For me, I think he can do anything. I think he can go in the game, and he could, if you had to play him or you wanted to play him as a starter, you could. If you wanted to play him in a third down role, you could. If you wanted to displace him out of the backfield, you could. There's so many things I think that this guy brings to the table that a lot of times you hear us talk about the versatility of a player. We love the fact that this guy had so much versatility that it gave us more than what we were looking for in just trying to find a quote-unquote runner or a quote-unquote receiver. We got a guy that we felt like could contribute in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I was obviously liked that your time on the West Coast this year. A lot of Pac-12 players making their way to the Cleveland Browns. I want to talk about two in particular from Washington State, because obviously Xavier Cooper was very highly thought of in our draft room. You guys made a pretty aggressive move up to go get him. For fans who don't know what you love about Xavier Cooper, why don't you let them hear?
Xavier Cooper is a young man that plays with his hair on fire. When you put the tape on, this guy was hustling. He competed. He found the ball. He had an very explosive, exceptionally explosive first step. The quickness, the speed. Anytime you have a guy on the defensive line, it's generally one or two skill sets that you covet. That's either the guy that has the explosiveness and the quickness to penetrate and play behind the line of scrimmage, or it's the guy, in the case of Danny Shelton, who has the explosive. His strength becomes the other impetus that you look for. But I think this guy is – the sky's the limit. I mean, he very well may be one of the guys that people look at and say, how did this guy get to this point? Because his skill set is that dynamic of the things he can accomplish.
Do you see him as a 3-technique or a 5-technique in this defense?
I think he can play both. When you look at him, a lot of 5-techniques are 6'5", 35-inch arms, et cetera, 280, 90 pounds. So he's a squattier body, thicker frame kid. But I do think his skill set would allow him to play in either position and still have success.
All right, the other Washington State guy getting a lot of attention because obviously wide receiver was a position of focus, Vince Maley. Incredibly productive last year, the only guy in Pac-12 history to have two games of 250 yards or more receiving in a single season. What is it about what he brings to the table that you liked, and why was he your target at wide receiver?
Again, targets are interesting because I would say he was the guy that we liked, and we liked what he could do, and when he became available at the spot that he was available, it made the most sense for us. Big body guy, can catch the ball in traffic, can play through contact, is very physical. He does have a rawness to him. Guy hasn't played a ton of football here recently, but the reality behind what he's able to accomplish with a short jump into that window of what he could be is very encouraging for him to take the next leap at this level with more coaching, more involvement, full-time access to just football. We think the sky's the limit for him.
Who did he remind you of as a player?
I'm fearful to say. There's a name that I have in my head, and I know what that means, but when you say it, people could take that out of context, but it's a very good NFL pro. And I guess I'll leave it at that.
Anquan Boldin. All right, go ahead.
You got it. And Ray, we can tell by the draft, of course, with you having 12, that there was definitely a plan. But can you share with the Browns fans, was there any surprise? Anybody that was on the board or that you moved up for that was a pleasant surprise, so much so that, you know, your room was extremely proud to get the guy? You're proud to get all 12. But a guy that was there, surprisingly enough so, for you to make a move, and you were elated that you were able to get him at the value pick that you were able to.
This is, I don't want to sound arrogant or like, I'm shocked by almost all of them. I really am. I when you looked up and we had debates about taking guys at different spots and different realms, and he's not going to be there, and you don't know. You don't know how anybody views their board. Like, when you go through it, I don't know what another team truly is thinking. And so you see it all the time. Guys get spooked, and they're like, that guy, he ain't making it there. So you do what we did with Xavier Cooper. We got to go get him. If we don't go get him now, he'll never be available. So you make those moves, and you think you have to make them. The ironic part about it is that the patience paid off in our favor this year. I mean, I've been a part of drafts where you're being patient, and then you get shot at the last second, and then you lament that you didn't go get the guy that you wanted to get. If you look at this draft, and you look early in the draft, the second round, you'll notice a lot of teams traded up. And they were just team after team after team started trading into the second round. Those guys were target shooting. They said, I want this guy, and I'm going to go get this guy right here. Conversely, we just kind of sat. You kind of got an idea of team needs, and it allows you to be a little bit more patient. At least from my perspective, it felt like that.
And in Nate Orchard's case, you were sitting at 43, able to move back to 51. So while everybody was jumping up to get their guy in target shooting, you most likely at 43 just thought your guy was still going to be available at 51.
Yeah, but that – I got
was
like
that nerve-wracking?
I got like 85 new gray hairs because of that one little spot in the draft. Because
30 minutes.
You like guys, but again, when you're dealing with a pod of players, you're not dealing with any one name. You know you're going to get one of your guys if you move to a certain distance. It's the idea of, yeah, there's a lot of anxiety behind, again, I keep calling it this, but it's like playing Battleship. Oh, B-15, I'm hit. B-16, I took another one. What you don't want to do is get to B-18 and then you're out.
Yeah.
And now it's your turn to pick. And I've seen that happen as well.
Was there anybody that you really wanted going into the draft? Who was the number one guy that you didn't end up getting?
Somewhat unfair, because they all got picked. They got picked early. I mean, early in the draft, you're like, I want all of these guys. I want that one. I want that one. And well, I get to take two of those. So it's a hard question to answer, because there's so many guys. When you put the kind of work in that you put in to come up with your board, there's a lot of guys that you kind of like, I don't want to say you fall in love with them, but you really start to appreciate who that player is and who he could be for your roster. So it's hard. It's hard to isolate any one guy and say, man, this guy, I wish I'd have got this one, because there's so many of them that could have made us better in a certain way if they were made Browns.
Last pick, you took Ifo out of Oregon. And I know if he could come out maybe last year, he goes first round. If this year, if he doesn't get hurt, maybe first round. Was that one that you are very excited? So you'll give him maybe a medical redshirt year and then bring him back, and just kind of the value. Is that why it's nice to have 12 picks in a draft, so you can just take a shot on a guy who could be a game changer for you, but that you're able to get so late?
I think it's a benefit. It definitely helps us when you have the number of picks that we had this year. It's also the person. I mean, earlier we talked about what attributes and what do we like about guys in this draft and how do we feel about these guys. To me, he's really one. Again, he was our last pick of the draft, but he really is the epitome of play like a Brown. This guy was more than accountable, team leader, do everything right. If there's a guy that can come back and overcome his circumstance, I really feel it's him. And so you give the guy like that the opportunity to prove that he truly is what we believe he is, which is he'll come in here and he'll give his best shot and his best effort to overcome the injury that he had. But I feel good about the young man and what he's going to be able to do in time.
Who was your favorite pick on day three?
Man, you guys got like the tough questions. my favorite pick on day three, all of them.
Is that a fair answer? That's fine. Is Malcolm Johnson, do you guys see him kind of like Marcel Reese was in Oakland? Is that kind of what he was drafted to be? Fullback, H-back, hybrid, move all around the field?
That's kind of what he did at Mississippi State, and he'll settle into a role here. I mean, when you watch the tape, again, the position versatility and the flexibility of where he was, the competitiveness, the toughness, the hands, the routes, the speed. And again, a guy to me, the right person for the job. Like we met with him, we talked to him, we talked to the people at Mississippi State, and people, like, you just get a sense for who the guy's going to be. And to me, that sense is very good with not only his locker room temperament, but his on-the-field temperament in play as well.
Ray, is it safe to say after adding 12 picks, all of which you were surprised to get and love the value you got for each and every pick, that the guys in this roster, on this roster currently prior to this draft are all on, some of them, not all, but are on notice and need to realize that it is a numbers game and that you're driving competition to put the best product on the football field 16 times from September to December?
Yeah, and again, you'll realize this. Being in an NFL locker room, guys in themselves are going to take notice on their own. It's not malicious. It's not an aggressive tactic by the club, but the competition on every roster is what makes that roster flourish. So we feel good about the guys that we added. Inevitably, I'll tell you this. Somebody from every draft class fails. You just don't know what the name is. So, but that lies on the individual. Who's willing to come in and contribute and put and lay it all on the line, be selfless and sacrifice for the good of the team and make us better?
That was Ray Farmer, general manager of the Cleveland Browns. So good, so composed that we thought you could hear some of his answers twice. So a slight little technical difficulty, but some great insight of the why, the who, and the what of this year's draft class, and to go inside the mind and inside that draft room as the Cleveland Browns did a very solid job adding value and competition and really filling some holes on this roster that definitely needed to be filled. One bit of news before we go to break. Greg Hardy's suspension, new Dallas Cowboy, has gone down from appealed from 10 games down to 4. So Jerry Jones, I have a feeling, probably got into the commissioner's pocketbook or into his cell phone some way and made that phone call to strategically make that signing and give him the money they did, knowing that he was only going to play 6 games didn't make a lot of sense. So it's appealed down from 10 games to 4. So a bit of NFL news, and we're going to take a timeout, and we're going to get our last best of the offseason interview. This one is going to be with Dane Brugler, senior NFL draft analyst for NFL Draft Scout, to recap this year's 2015 Browns NFL draft. Matt Wilhelm, Matt Fontana with you today on this Friday, wrapping up Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.